Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
And welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. I'm a little bit under the weather, and my name is Chris Sims, and with me as always is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you tonight?
I'm just talking sexy.
That's right, this is going to be a very sexy episode of War Rocket Ajax, everybody.
We're sitting next to each other on the couch.
We are on a couch, that is true.
We got some steaming hot tea in front of us.
This isn't like our Christmas episodes where we pretend to have a cabin. This is like we are literally sitting on a couch together with steaming cups of tea.
We just finished up a great day at Sumter Comic Symposium, Comic Art Symposium. We'll be talking about that in a minute. We're also going to be doing some panel president lists. To fill out that list a little more.
That's right, it's a very special episode. No guests this time, just me, Matt, my couch, these steaming mugs of tea.
Yeah.
And the panel president list.
That's right, it's going to be good. But before we do that, Chris, we are going to do some checks and wrecks, as we want to do. So come over and diggity check yourself before you wreck yourself. So what are you checking in with?
My check this week, Matt, is that, we had a good day today.
We did.
But last weekend, I had a great, great weekend.
Okay, that's really hurtful, but thanks.
I mean, they're both great. They can both be great. I don't know why you're making it like this.
No, you did have... you told me how great your weekend last weekend
was. Yeah, my weekend last weekend was great. Sharpling and Worcester, Tom Sharpling and John Worcester were playing... They were doing a live show in Durham, North Carolina. So Aiden and I decided that we would go up, see Sharpling and Worcester live, and we would make a little weekend of it. We would make a weekend getaway to Durham, North Carolina, which at the time we thought was laughable. We thought, ha-ha, a weekend getaway to Durham. Turns out Durham is great. Turns out we might actually be moving to Durham because we loved it so much. But we stayed in this fantastic boutique hotel. Matt, ask me how nice this hotel was.
Chris, how nice was this hotel?
I'm glad you asked. This hotel was so nice that they had a little form in the room that you could fill out and hang on the door to just let them know which locally sourced fresh ground coffee you wanted, ground fresh and delivered to your room in the morning, and at what time, so that you could get it, drink a little coffee, and then go to rooftop yoga. This hotel had rooftop yoga. It was thebomb.com/awesome. So the hotel was great. Durham itself was great. The Sharpling and Worcester live show was phenomenal. Obviously, Tom Sharpling and John Worcester have been the people behind the best show for years. If you're not familiar with the best show, if you've never checked that out, you still probably know Tom Sharpling as the voice of Greg Universe on Steven Universe, Steven's dad. And, their live show is virtually indescribable. It's a comedy show, and it's a comedy show that has characters, including characters drawn from the radio show. There's also music. There is an interview segment involving Gary the Squirrel, who is a puppet operated by Tom Sharpling. That, I think, was where the show lost Aiden. It has two climactic musical numbers. There's a break after the first one. But it was a really fantastic show. I had a great time. I was apparently geeking out like Aiden had never seen before, because I was about to see Sharpling and Worcester live. And it's funny because, you know, she sees me at cons. We go to cons together and it's all just like, oh yeah, you know, Fraction, I know him. He's on the show every Christmas, you know. Seeing Tom Sharpling, like, I was super excited. And then after the show, like, I very fanishly was like, you don't remember, but I met you in San Diego, and I gave you a copy of my book. And he totally remembered the book. He was like, oh, it was about the football guy. And I was like, yeah. He said, that was good. And then that was my night. That was my night made. That was good.
That was good.
From Tom Sharpling. So, yeah, Sharply and Worcester Live was great. This apparently was their last time doing that version of the show, but they're going to have another live show next year. If you are a Best Show fan, then I would say get on that. That is a fun, fun time to go see those dudes live. Matt, what is your check this week?
My check is basically coming down here for the comic symposium. We're recording this on Saturday, which is a little later than we normally do. I drove down...
It's 2 days later than we normally record it, because it is actually recording time right now.
That's true. But I drove down Friday, got here Friday evening, and made an appearance at a dinner where everybody who was at the symposium had gotten together. That included you, me, Chad wasn't actually at the dinner, but he was around today. Erica Henderson was there, Kyle Starks was there, Chris Schweitzer, who is a great guy. Yeah. I really enjoyed talking to him this weekend. Andy Kunkka, who we've had on the show before, one of the hosts of the Comics Alternative podcast. So we had a good night there, and I arrived to lots of surprise at the considerable size of my beard.
Yeah.
Anytime I have left the room for more than an hour, like when I went to, Kyle and I had a panel today about Kickstarter, as soon as I came back in the room, you acted surprised by my beard again.
I forget about it when it's not in front of me. Okay, to be fair, Matt, I've seen you with a beard before. I've seen you.
Sure.
You grow a winter beard.
That I do almost every year.
Almost every year. We've been friends for 7 years.
Yeah.
So I have seen you grow your beard multiple times. I have never seen a beard like this. I referred to you as Curtis Axel the moment you walked into that party. It's like you have joined the Wyatt family. It is an out of control beard. And I love it. Don't get me wrong. It looks great. I love it. But it is way more beard than I have ever seen on your face.
This is the first year that I just decided to go wild with it and just let it grow and see what happened. Because most years I have actually had to work in an office, so I've had to keep it, you know, fairly trimmed. But this year that has not been an issue, and I've just been like, okay, let's see what happens with it. This has been growing at least since December, I think since November, because there's a photo of me. I'm wearing my New Day t-shirt right now.
Mm-hmm.
I got my New Day t-shirt for Christmas. There's a photo of me on my Instagram where I had taken a picture of me in the New Day t-shirt when I got it on Christmas Day. And I had, like, maybe a few weeks worth of beard.
Right.
So this is at least 3 months worth of beard, if not more.
Yeah.
And what I love just this weekend is all the comparisons to people with big beard, like big bushy beards, that have happened. Because I've gotten Curtis Axel from you.
Yeah.
You also said I look like the handsome alternative for Brian Posehn.
Yes.
Like in a sitcom where he had been recast.
Yes.
With somebody. From lots of people, I've gotten Daniel Bryan comparisons because I'm also growing my hair out.
Yeah.
So it's getting longer. And I was wearing like a Daniel Bryan lumberjack shirt when I showed up yesterday. One that came from me earlier this week was I was in the bathroom, I just looked in the mirror, and suddenly, staring back at me, I saw the Making a Murderer guy, and I was like, no! So Stephen Avery is one. I think there were some other comparisons. Certainly Kyle Starks made some observations about my beard.
I'm sitting on my podcast with fucking Bruiser Brody right now.
Luke Harper's here.
Yeah. Here's my question.
Yeah.
Here's my question, and I want you to feel free to answer this however you see fit.
All right.
I've been wanting to ask since yesterday, can I touch it?
Okay, here we go. I'm going to have to wash it right after this because you're sick.
I am sick, but I've been coughing I've been Dracula coughing.
I condition it every day.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I can tell.
Yeah.
I just touched Matt's beard. None of you saw that, but I just touched it.
Yeah. I comb it. I haven't combed it since yesterday, but I do condition it regularly. And you know what? It feels really nice. Nicer than any beard I've had before, because I've actually had to care for it.
Yeah.
I nearly made the panel with Kyle. Like, for whatever reason, I decided not to do this. But I was sitting there thinking before the panel, like, quickly get out of the way some stuff about Kickstarter and then just launch into beard care.
Yeah. I can. You totally could have done it.
Yeah. Because I know Kyle does some beard care. He has to. All right, those are our checks.
Those are our checks.
Rex, Chris, what do you have to recommend?
Alka-Seltzer severe cold and cough. It is keeping me going right now. I feel like I had another wreck, but I have been battling this thing off all week. So, Matt, do you have a proper wreck this week?
Yeah, I'm recommending an album that I've been listening to. It's actually, if you have Amazon Prime, you can stream it for free right now. It's an album that came out last year and I think was very well represented on some like end of year lists. I know it was on Pitchfork's end of year list, but for whatever reason, I just kind of came around to listening to it. If I remember right, Ramon Villalobos mentioned it when he was on the show, or at least he mentioned Vince Staples when he was on the show a few weeks ago. It's the Vince Staples album that came out last year, Summertime 06.
Okay.
It's basically, it's a gangster rap album, but also on the second real song, like there's an intro, right? But on the third track, which is the second real song, there's one of my favorite lines on the album where he says, I'm a gangster crip, fuck gangster rap. So it's a lot about when he was in the Crips. He's not anymore. But so there's a lot of that in it, but there's also some really clever lyricism and really spare production that make it kind of an exceptional album that explores that territory. And it does some really different things. I've been listening to it a lot, and it helps that it has recently popped up on Amazon Prime because you can just stream it. But if you have Amazon Prime, or even if you don't, and you're just looking for something to listen to and you're in a hip-hop mood, Summertime 06 is really good. I like it a lot. It has been dominating my music listening lately. And that's my rec.
That's a good rec. I will check that out. All right, so let's talk about some comics for a little bit.
I think we're only going to do two this week. One, because we've kind of been indisposed with travel and stuff. But also, we don't have our comics right in front of us, so we have to just kind of talk about whatever we remember. And one very memorable comic from this week was Mighty Morphin Power Rangers number 1, which is not what I expected from that book at all. We talked to Kyle Higgins about it when we had him on the show, and he sort of described exactly the book we got.
Yeah.
Which is very much kind of a look into what the Power Rangers do between the big fights. Like, this issue is all about sort of the fallout from the Green Ranger showing up.
Right. It's the sequel that Green with Evil never gets.
Like, yeah.
A thing that I talk about in the reviews that I've been doing is that Tommy very quickly just becomes one of the kids.
Right.
And so all of his character development and all of him dealing with being a brainwashed monster, essentially, is subtextual. Like, you can read into it as much as you want, but you never actually get to see it. Getting to see that in the comic, I was really excited about. Because I do think that is, like, what do you want from something that is a, and I say this with all due respect, because Lord knows I am co-writing X-Men 92 right now, but, you know, what do you want from a nostalgia project that can still be relevant to kids who are watching Power Rangers in reruns now? Like, you want it to be something that you haven't seen before. You want it to be a new piece of that puzzle. And I feel like this is doing a really good job of being that. Like, showing us Tommy's internal conflict.
Yeah.
And I say that, and I'm throwing around words like internal conflict, but it's also very fun and accessible.
Yeah, it's not, you know, we're making it sound like it's the comic that happens between the action scenes. And in some ways it is, but that doesn't mean it's an actionless comic.
Yeah. But I think also because it has breathing space, because the weird, a weird thing about Power Rangers. There's a lot of weird things about Power Rangers. Those episodes are like sometimes 18, 19 minutes long. They're super short.
And very formulaic.
And very formulaic. Yeah. And when you're doing a comic that, you know, you have arcs involved, you can spread out. Like, you don't have to have the Megazord show up on page 16 in every issue. And I think it's nice that we get that. And also that we get Bulk and Skull as reader viewpoint characters. That's a great idea. Bulk and Skull having a podcast is a great idea.
Bulk having a video series called Ranger Station?
Yeah, Bulk, who kind of looks like me, introducing everyone to Ranger Station on page one.
I was telling
Marlene... And making Skull do all the production work, by the way.
I was telling Marlene about that. And I was like, yeah, Bulk looks a lot like Chris, and he's got a thing called Ranger Station. And then she was kind of waiting for me to talk about Skull. And I was like, no, Skull doesn't look like me.
Yeah, Skull looks like Jason Narby.
And she was like, what? I was like, I doubt that there are far fewer pictures of me around. Also, I don't know if it's actually supposed to be Chris.
No.
But Skull does do all the production work.
I think it is a series of truly hilarious coincidences. Because honestly, who would that be in there for? It would be in there for you and me.
But Ranger Station almost seems like too far.
Ranger Station... Well, the weird thing is, Ranger Station was the first... was the first thing that Andrew Wheeler came up with. Because all of my ideas for... Power Rangers column names, when I started doing Ranger Station at Comics Alliance, all of my ideas have been taken. Like, there's a podcast called The Morphin Grid. There's a podcast called Teenagers with Attitude.
Yeah.
I think Morphin Time was the one that I came up with that I was like, there's no way this hasn't been taken. So Wheeler was like, Ranger Station. Like, that was his first thought. So I kind of feel like that's the way, a similar way that they arrived at it. It's the only thing left.
It is entirely possible. It is entirely possible that these were two ships passing in the night.
Yeah.
But it is an astonishing number of coincidences.
Also that, you know, all chubby white guys kind of look the same.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
It is a really interesting... Like, it just like Kyle Higgins told us he was going to do, it sort of injects a level of drama into Power Rangers that you can't really have on the TV show.
Yeah.
And it's the timeline stuff's really interesting because it's clearly taking place in a certain point in the TV show.
Yeah.
But Bulk and Skull have a podcast.
But it's also taking place in 2016.
Exactly.
Which I love because when you're a kid, you know, when I was a kid, when I was 8 years old, I didn't realize Batman 66 happened 25 years before. You
right.
know? You just thought that's what Batman looks like.
Right.
And I love that for kids, that it is kind of a stealth update in that way. But yeah, like, the thing is, you can't have Rita interact with Tommy, right? You can never interact with the Green Ranger.
Sure.
But you can't have, like, Scorpina and Goldar interacting with Tommy. Or you can have Goldar, because he's a suit, but... Like, Rita and Scorpina, those characters, you never see them interacting with Tommy directly.
That's a really incisive look at the character of Goldar. He really is a suit, you know?
He's so corporate. So corporate these days. But yeah, you get to do that in the comic. Anyway, I think Power Rangers number one is great. I thought the Zero issue was great. Shout out to the dude who works at a store where he got one of the store-exclusive variant covers, who's sending me one, because I'm excited about that. All those variant covers were great.
The other comic we wanted to talk about is Batgirl number 49, which is a very intriguing issue of a DC comic happening really close to Rebirth.
Yeah.
Because this comic is all about rebooting Barbara Gordon's brain.
Yeah. It's really good, too.
Yes.
It's a super fun adventure. The basic premise is that there's a bad guy who has wormed his way into Barbara Gordon's brain, and
essentially she has a computer virus in her brain.
Yeah, he has, like, taken away her memories, and now he has access to her memories, which obviously include Batman's secret identity, both of them.
Right.
all three of them, I guess, in the New 52. But, and sort of in, like, making Barbara Gordon think that she has this childhood friend that she's been friends with all along, that it's just this guy who's been rooting around in her head.
Right, and also...
And also in her apartment.
There's stuff about her forgetting about James Jr.
Yeah.
Or not being sure about James Jr. So that's some really intriguing stuff. And then the Team Batgirl, basically, is trying to figure out how to, one, get the bad guy out of her head without her losing everything.
Yeah. They don't want to reformat her brain.
Yes. So they figure out a way to do this, but in doing so, they sort of create... It is still Barbara Gordon when she comes back, but there's certainly a sense that there is, like, more going on in the head of this Barbara Gordon, or it is a slightly different Barbara Gordon... brain and set of memories after the fact.
Yeah.
Because there's this one huge full page spread where we see a bunch of stuff that didn't happen according to the New 52 or happened in a different way according to the New 52 showing up in these little boxes.
Mm-hmm.
For better or worse, one of those things is the Killing Joke. But, you know, it's this really intriguing, like, maybe early look at what the plans are for Rebirth.
I don't know if it's quite that, but it is something that's... What struck me about it was that they use the backup Barbara Gordon personality, right? They essentially do a Batman RIP.
Yes.
Except that the backup personality is a previously introduced plot point. It's the AI that tried to nuke Burnside, basically.
It's honestly actually not all that different from what happened in... We didn't talk about Batman number 49, but it's kind of what happened in there, too.
It's a lot like what happens in Batman 49. Yeah. Wow. You're exactly right. And it's very similar to what happens in that issue of Grayson, where they go back and all the dialogue is drawn from previous... stories, some of which obviously did not happen in the New 52, like Robin Dies at Dawn.
I don't know if that's all coordinated or not, yeah. But it's interesting.
It's this, the AI that predates the Burnside reboot. And so when the AI goes into Barbara Gordon's brain and it's kind of materializing in a Batgirl form, it's wearing the Batgirl costume.
The original New 52 costume.
Yeah, the first New 52 Batgirl costume. So it's weird to see all of that stuff kind of battling it out, because it is this metatextual sort of old Batgirl versus new Batgirl idea. Like, I really like the issue. I hadn't considered that it might have any teases for Rebirth, but it's a...
I don't know if it does or not.
Yeah.
But it feels like the first really... Well, one of the first really effective DC acknowledging that anything happened before the New 52 kinds of things. Because it's happened before with, like, Pandora, but that always felt kind of like fakery or like weird fan teasing. This feels like, okay, guys, we're opening the gates a little bit here. I don't know if that's right or not, but there's a sense of that to it. And the issue's really good too. It's kind of an art jam issue. Including art by Ming Doyle in there.
Is it? Wow.
Yeah. And I usually I'm not crazy about art jam issues, but I actually liked this one because it's supposed to represent such a kind of like disjointed mental state.
Yeah.
So I think it works. One of the few times that an art jam issue works. All right, Chris, that's our comic segment.
That is our comic segment.
We're going to take a pause. You're going to hear an ad, and then we're going to do some panel president after this.
President. All right, Matt, I'm ready to discuss the panel president list.
All right, here we go. We have a list here.
Do we need to explain this to anybody?
Maybe we should.
Okay. Panel President is our ongoing project for the year 2016, where we are ranking comic book characters on a master list from best to worst. Our listeners send in characters, and we are merely the arbiters. We merely interpret to form this comprehensive list. There are currently 23 entries on the list. We haven't been at this too long. At the top, Spider-Man, Peter Parker, greatest comic book character ever created. At the very bottom, the Hemogoblin.
Let's not talk about
him. I'm not even going to describe him. But, Matt, who do we have to add this week?
Well, our listeners are sending in lists of characters for us to add to the great master list of panel president. Who will be the panel president? And this list that we have comes from Timothy Barnett. There's a little bit of a theme to this one.
Okay.
See if you can figure it out.
Okay. I'll see.
The first one on the list is Starman, Ted Knight.
Okay, now we've got Jack Knight, Starman, on the list already.
Yep.
So I guess the obvious question is Ted Knight a better character than Jack Knight?
Do you think so?
I don't. But I've also read more Jack Knight comics than I have Golden Age Starman comics. But also, arguably, most of those Jack Knight comics are also Ted Knight comics.
He is in them.
I mean, very central to them, I would say.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's as good a character as Jack Knight.
Me neither.
Yeah. I would rather hang out with Ted Knight, though, than Jack Knight. Jack Knight's a little bit of an asshole.
Yeah. I don't think Ted Knight, particularly as Starman, is as interesting. But you could say that of virtually any Golden Age character.
Any Golden Age character who didn't survive, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he is an interesting character, though. Like, I like the idea of Ted Knight. I like a lot of things that have been done with him. I like that James Robinson idea that I think was in the Golden Age. The book, The Golden Age. Right. The Golden Age in italics. That it was Ted Knight who caused superheroes. Because his experiments with cosmic rays allowed things that wouldn't have worked under normal science to work by kind of showering the world in this strange cosmic energy. That I thought was a really cool idea that helped explain like all the weirdness of the Golden Age. Like how you could just, you know, take a pill and you're Superman for an hour.
Right.
Like, I like those things about him. I just don't know, like, if somebody told me, hey, there's a new Starman book, I was like, oh, is it Jack Knight? And they'd be like, no, it's Ted. I'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like, even in the JSA, like, I don't really think of him as the most interesting member of the JSA.
Who do you think is the most interesting of the JSA? I wonder if we have the same answer.
Dr. Midnight?
Chuck McKnighter?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I would have gone with Rex TikTok Tyler.
Yeah.
Our Man.
Our Man is cool.
Yeah.
Mr. Terrific is interesting.
That dude loves fair play.
He does. Okay, well let's rank Ted Knight.
Okay, so he doesn't go above Jack Knight.
No.
Obviously. Right below Jack Knight we have Hobbs the Tiger. I don't think he goes above Hobbs.
Okay. I don't think he goes above Spider Jerusalem.
But I do think he might be on par with Prometheus.
Okay, above or below.
This is making me want to read a comic where Prometheus tries to kill Ted Knight. That would be great.
That would be a good book.
That's the best comic of 1998. I would say probably Ted Knight goes above, I would say.
Okay, so between Spider-Jerusalem and Prometheus is where Ted Knight goes.
All right, entering the list at number 11.
Ted Knight.
Starman, Ted Knight.
The next one on Timothy's list is Starman, Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas, McCall Thomas, yeah. I kind of get the feeling that I know what the third entry on the list is going to be.
Take a guess.
Is it Prince Gavin or is it David? Or not David, what's his name?
William Payton.
William Payton, Will Payton, yeah. Okay, so Will Payton's going to go real low.
Number four, you Prince call Gavin? Them both. David Knight is number four.
Okay. Well, Will Payton sucks. He's going to go super low.
Okay.
Will Payton's terrible.
Well, let's stick with McCall.
McCall Thomas, of the Starman in the James Robinson Starman, the second most interesting.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
You know, because he's David Bowie. He's David Bowie as a superhero in the 70s.
Right.
You know, Robinson and Harris and Snabjerg took this weird one-shot character and turned him into David Bowie, you know, the bisexual space alien superhero, alien renegade. He's great. I think he is probably more interesting to me than Ted Knight is.
Okay.
Better
character than Ted Knight? Interesting is one thing.
Yeah. More potential, I think, for Michael. I don't know, yeah, he's a really good idea.
Okay.
And I think, execution-wise, done really well in the pages of Starman. The thing is, like, there's nothing outside of Starman. Like, there's one issue of what is it, first issue special, or wherever he first appears, and that's it. And there's Starman. And then Robinson kind of brings him back in what, like, I mean, he's in, like, Cry for Justice, right?
Yeah.
And that's pretty rough stuff.
Not the character's fault.
Yeah. But also, anything in Cry for Justice is going to end up leaving a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah. So, if we're going to put him above Ted Knight,
mm-hmm.
should we put him right above Ted Knight?
I would say yes. I don't think he's as interesting as Spider Jerusalem.
All right, then let's put McCall there.
But a good character.
Yeah. All right, we've already established that William Payton is going to not fare so well.
Yeah, Will Payton sucks.
Yeah.
Will Payton is honestly kind of great because of how much he sucks. What's the best Will Payton story? It's the James Robinson story about how Will Payton kind of sucks and how, like, yeah. nobody likes him.
Right.
That and his one appearance on the cover of Justice League America where he is turning down membership in the Justice League. Like, and look, Will Payton, Starman, even that Justice League you should have not turned down membership into. Buddy, come on.
Yeah, you trying to big time the Justice League?
You're Starman 5, buddy.
So, I think he might go in, like, Terry Long territory?
No, I don't think he's that bad.
He's not that bad.
He's not worse than Extraño.
Is he worse than Nomad?
I was looking at putting him under Adam X. But I think Fletcher Arrowsmith is probably a better character.
Yeah, I'd say so, too. Maybe right between Fletcher Arrowsmith and Nomad? Or below Nomad?
Put him below Nomad. That feels right to me. So entering the list at 21.
We've got Will Payton. And then number 4 on Tim's list is the Starman of 1951, David Knight.
Starman of 1951. The weirdest thing that happens in Starman is trying to explain the Starman of 1951. Because it's Dr. Midnight for a minute, right?
Right.
Yeah. And then it's time-traveling David Knight.
Yeah.
Now, David Knight, we're not just counting him as Starman of 1951, we're counting him as the ghost of David Knight who shows up all through the run, right? Talking with David.
Yeah.
Some of the best issues.
Yes.
But as far as an actual character, like, that's the thing, like, those issues are good, but as a character, like...
He's there to move to move another character along.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I...
There's kind of not a lot to him.
Yeah. I would say he's about on par with Fletcher Arrowsmith. In terms of, like, the stuff around him is more interesting than he is.
Yeah.
Like, we only know him as a foil for Jack as, you know, and as a dead guy.
Let's slot him right below Fletcher Arrowsmith.
I think that's a good place for him.
All
right. So entering the list at 20, right above Nomad... David Knight.
Okay, that's all our Starmen. The last one on Timothy's list, obviously, filling it out, Annihilus, the living death that walks.
Annihilus from Fantastic Four?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I've never heard him called the living death that walks.
I mean, unless it's a different Annihilus.
Oh, man, I gotta look this up. I gotta do it. I gotta make sure. I don't think I got that far when I was reading Kirby Fantastic Four. Living death. Here it is. It auto-completes in Google. The living death that walks.
Annihilus.
That is him. Amazing. I am Annihilus, Lord of the Negative Zone. Annihilus, the living death that walks.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. I love Annihilus. You know why I love Annihilus? I remember when the Green Lantern stuff was coming out, like the War of Light stuff, right? And I was like, ugh, look at this character. He's so dumb. His name's Atrocitus.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Annihilation was coming out, and I was reading it, and I was like, oh, it's Annihilus! Same name. Same name.
Pretty much.
Annihilus is great. He's a weird space bug from the Negative Zone.
Yeah. He's Negative Zone space bug Dr. Doom.
Yeah. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Do we have Dr. Doom on this list yet?
Not yet.
He's
coming.
That's gonna be a tough one to rank.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like you're gonna wanna put him. I feel like you're gonna wanna put him above Batman.
Well, let's cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, okay. Annihilus. Annihilus is pretty great, man. Annihilus is. Do you think Annihilus is better or worse than Bad-Rock?
Better.
You think he's better? Okay. Do you think he's better or worse than. Say he's better than Prometheus?
I feel like there are more. There's more to pull from for Annihilus. I mean, there's some bad Annihilus stories, and there's some good Annihilus stories, but I feel like Annihilus, the character.
As a character, he does have an inherent quality to him.
Yeah. And of all the Negative Zone villains, like, in some ways, he's kind of the only one that holds up. You know what I mean?
Who else do we have? From the Blastar?
Blastar. Blastar is mainly who I was thinking of.
Yeah.
I'm always kind of disappointed when Blastar shows up.
You want Blastar to be cooler than he is.
Yeah.
And Annihilus is, like, exactly as cool as you think he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would say, are we going to put him above? I don't think he's as good as Hobbs.
Okay, that's fair.
I think that's fair. Do you want to put him above Spider Jerusalem?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Between Hobbs and Spider Jerusalem.
So, entering the list at number 10.
That's a good showing for Annihilus.
Yeah.
All right. That is our list from Tim Barnett. Tim, thank you for that list.
That's a fun list. That's a very fun list.
All right. This is an interesting list from Thomas Foss.
Tom Foss. Long time.
Line stepper.
Long time.
This one's gonna pull out some discussion from us, Chris.
Oh, okay.
Number one on his list, Superman, Clark Kent. Interestingly, not Superman (parentheses) Kal-El.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Kal-El or are we talking about Kal-El? Which no, okay, Superman. So main continuity, Superman.
Yes, Earth One Superman.
Earth One Superman or Earth Zero Superman?
New Earth Superman.
New Earth Superman? Superman.
Yeah.
We're just talking about Superman.
Yeah. Not distinct from Golden Age Superman, who is, well, I guess he's not distinct from him now.
The weird thing is, like, I was going to say that, like, we can kind of, like, rank, like, Superman, right? Because when we did Batman, like, it's Batman.
Sure.
It's like Detective Comics 27 to Batman Volume 2, number 49. Like, that's the guy we're talking about.
Yeah.
Superman is weird because right now DC Comics is telling us that John Byrne Superman and Grant Morrison Superman coexist.
Yeah.
John Byrne Superman and Grant Morrison Rex Morales Superman coexist in the universe, and one of them is not aware of the other's existence. But no, I think we can say, like,
they're all Superman.
We're talking about Superman appearing in Action Comics and Superman published by DC Comics Monthly.
Yeah. And inclusive Earth 1 Superman, Earth 2 Superman, who are both Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one's listening now. They're like, this asshole's coughing. This other asshole's talking about Earth 1 and Earth 2. fucking done. So Superman's great. Superman's really, really great. Like, you can't argue that. You can't argue that Superman is a bad character. You can't argue that he's not...
People do, but they're wrong.
They're wrong, yeah. If you argue that Superman is a bad character, you're just wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you can not like Superman, that's fine. But if you think he is an intrinsically bad character, you're wrong. You know, in more or less invented the superhero genre. Everybody else on this list is going to be a reflection of, reaction to, subversion of that idea, right?
Superheroes, at least.
Superheroes, at least.
I mean, we've got...
Hobbs less
is
so.
Not... yeah.
Less so. But, you know, nobody on this list would exist without him.
I mean, unless they were, like, funny animal comic characters, yeah.
I mean, the closest thing we have to that on the list right now is Jughead.
Yeah.
Now, here's my thing. I think... It is hard to say Superman is better than Jughead. I think he is. That is, I think, the absolute lowest Superman can go. Superman cannot go above Batman for me. Batman is a better character.
I feel like on the list as we have it now.
Yes.
Superman's got to go number three.
Okay, so you're saying our top three, Spider-Man, Batman, Superman.
Yeah.
Superman outranks Hellboy. I mean, I think that's an easy place to put him.
Yeah.
And then I think we can never adjust those three.
We probably can't ever change those top three.
Like, we might as well chisel those into stone.
But I'm telling you, when Dr. Doom comes up...
It's going to be hard.
Yeah.
It's going to be very difficult when Dr. Doom... Here's what's going to be difficult in the future, listeners. Dr. Doom... Scrooge McDuck.
Yep.
Those are the two.
Those are two.
But we're going to have to be, like, really battling it out. But yeah, as the list as it stands, Superman, parentheses, Clark Kent, enters at number three.
All right. Steel, John Henry Irons. I love Steel.
I love Steel. Steel's great.
Yeah.
Steel should be huge. Steel should be huge.
I tell you what brings Steel down.
Okay.
And it is not the Shaquille O'Neal movie. That lifts Steel up.
Okay. But
what breaks Steel down is that... And I know what DC Comics was trying to do, because it got people to take notice of the character. Huh. But I think tying Steel to Superman makes him seem like a Superman also-ran, when he could be really effective... as just his own character.
I was going to say, like, the one thing you have to confront with Steel, whether you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, he wears an S on his chest.
Yes.
And even when they changed it, which I actually liked, I liked the, you know, when he first appears as Steel in Reign of the Superman, he has just Superman's S.
Right.
But then by the time he's in the Justice League, it's a different
S.
It's slightly different. It's modified. It's a, you know, he doesn't have the point at the end of the Pentagon. He changes it. But he's always going to have that S, and he's always going to be a Superman affiliate. And I think that does hold him back, because that keeps him from being Iron Man. What if Superman was Iron Man? Like, what if Iron Man was Superman?
He's Iron Man with the tech removed. He's low-tech Iron Man.
But he's not low-tech. He had an Iron Man suit.
Yeah, right. I'm just saying, he doesn't have all the glowy lights.
He doesn't have the glowy lights. He does have the magic hammer.
Yeah.
What's Marvel got? Thor and Iron Man and Captain America? Put them together.
Yeah.
That's what Steel is.
Yeah. I mean, but he's also got, like, there's this really cool DIY element of Steel.
Yeah.
Where he's got rivets on his outfit, right?
Yeah.
He's got a great look. He's
great
a
look.
Great character.
Great character.
He could easily be DC's, like, most popular, front and center, high selling black superhero.
I agree. I honestly agree.
Like, name somebody who would be higher.
Well, here's the weird thing. What they had with Steel in JLA, I feel like they tried to replicate with Cyborg in Justice League. In New 52. Like, Cyborg has been moved up.
Cyborg is the only one who's kind of on par with him. Like,
yeah.
Mr. Terrific's great, but, like, who knows Mr. Terrific?
Yeah.
Steel and Cyborg are what they have.
Yeah. And I feel like because there was a lot of nostalgia for New Teen Titans from people who are about our age who are now in charge of comics.
Right.
And I feel like because Cyborg was a TV character, that Cyborg has occupied that space that in the late 90s looked like it was going to be Steel.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, there's...
But that's why Steel doesn't end up on... What we were saying about him being a Superman analog, also ran, yeah, whatever. That's why he doesn't end up on Justice League teams. Because right. somebody invariably ends up saying, well, we don't need two Supermen on the team.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas... And to be fair, the section of the team he was on in JLA was kind of the B team, because he was there with Huntress,
right,
who's kind of another Batman.
Right.
Which, where's that World's Finest book? Where's the Helena Bertinelli, John Henry Irons team-up book? That shit would be awesome.
Nobody but us would buy it, but I would buy the hell out of that book.
but Steel is great. Like, I love his origin. I love that, you know... He's this genius who has to go into hiding because he realizes that he's being, you know, used to make weapons for Inner Gang. I love that he's a guy who watches the death of Superman and is like, well, somebody's got to do something.
Yeah.
And so he builds himself an Iron Man suit and goes out as the Man of Steel. Like, I love that he continues doing that. I love that he's, of the four Supermen, of the Reign of the Superman. He is. Oh, did I just stumble on the?
yep.
Did I stumble on the list of the four Supermen? Two are villains, and Superboy. Superboy's great, but Superboy is Superboy. You know, he's a diminutive.
Right.
Steel was the one who was like an equal to Superman. In as much as you can be an equal to Superman.
Of all of them, I feel like Steel had and has the most potential.
Yeah. I wish that, like, it was. I wish it was more likely that we would get Steel while Cyborg is around, because I don't want to have to sacrifice one for the other. But I feel like, you know, DC's premier tech-based hero is gonna be one of those two guys. And then that kind of removes the need for the other, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I feel like Cyborg is it for now. Whereas Steel, you know, Steel's great. I wish there was more. Steel's great.
Let's rank him. Like, is he in, it's around Jack Knight territory?
I was looking at maybe right below Hobbs.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Steel's awesome.
That's a good spot for Steel. Because he's a great character, but there's a lot of things that...
a lot of potential and a lot of really, really good ideas.
But there are a lot of things that, for lack of a better term, hold him back.
Yeah.
That are not faults of the character, but...
And, like, really great supporting cast.
Yeah.
Like, Natasha Irons becoming Steel, like, was a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know... And how often do you see what is nominally a supporting cast character get their own supporting cast? Like, that's happened with Nightwing and Steel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, next on the list, we've got Superboy, Kal-El / Connor Kent.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing about Superboy, and I don't know if this is a bug or a feature, I guess we'll figure it out, is that he is very fluid. He's constantly changing in appearance and personality.
Yeah.
And everything else. Like 90s Superboy is not 2000 Superboy, even though they're ostensibly the same character.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. It's weird how much he changes.
Yeah.
Because, see, here's the thing. If we were just talking about Superboy from 1993 to 2000, right?
That's fucking Tom Grummett.
Tom Grummett ass Superboy. Because in 1993, nobody gave a shit about Jack Kirby. And I hate to say that, but it's true. Like, everybody, like, nobody... Nobody liked back issues in 1993, you know? Nobody liked old comics. Nobody liked Kirby stuff, except for Carl Kiesel and Tom Grummett, and they put all the Kirby shit that DC had into Superboy.
Yeah.
So, like, OMAC shit is in Superboy.
You bet.
Double X is in Superboy. It's fucking awesome. the Newsboy Legions and Superboy. And Superboy being the payoff of Cadmus, a literal 20-year payoff to, you know, to go from the introduction of Project Cadmus to the death of Superman, and then pay it off with Superboy. Genius. Like, brilliant to go back to that stuff and bring it back. Unfortunately, the shift in Superboy, I think, takes away a lot of what I liked about him. The Lex Luthor stuff, I'm not a huge fan of. Like, that he's a clone of Superman and a clone of Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Was that a New 52 thing?
No, that was a Jeff Johns Teen Titans thing.
Because they changed his origin again in New 52.
Which I think they gave him the Young Justice TV show origin, right?
Yeah. But I think there's a really good reason why that Superboy book didn't last. While the Supergirl book did fine, I think. There was a point at which Superboy got way too complicated.
Yeah.
With all that rebooting stuff, or like tinkering with his origin and tinkering with him as a character.
And the weird thing is, like, you say that, but 90s Superboy is just as complicated. It's just complicated shit that we like.
I mean, that's like, fair.
Cadmus, Double X, The Guardian, that shit is complicated. But I also feel like Carl Kiesel and Tom Grummet presented it in a way that was very accessible.
It's also kind of easily ignored, too. And I mean, that's what you're saying. Like you could just sit down with one of those 90s Superboy comics and read it and say, like, oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
Whereas, especially when he came back in the New 52, it was just kind of like, from the get-go, hey, let's deal with a bunch of complicated origin shit.
Yeah. And it's weird, but you get to a point where you kind of have to. Because if Superboy is going to be a clone of Superman, you have to wonder why there aren't more. Like,
that's true.
They always kind of have to explain, like, well, why didn't you just make 10 clones of Superman and get it right? But a lot of stuff kind of...
It also runs into, like, weird stuff where, like, there's Superboy clone of Superman and there's Bizarro clone of Superman. Yeah.
And, like, that holds him back in a way that I wish it didn't, because I love the idea of Superboy being Superman minus the Kents.
Yeah.
Like, if you took the Kents away from Superman, he wouldn't be a bad guy.
But he'd wear some leather jackets and some circle sunglasses.
He'd be a shitty teen. Clark Kent was not a shitty teen. Like, Clark Kent was never a shitty teen. Clark Kent was like Archie, right?
Yeah, he was, like, yeah.
Like, everybody else had to be a shitty teen. So, we get to see Superman as a shitty teen without seeing Superman as a shitty teen. I like that. Yeah. I like that idea a lot. And I think that's fun. I think there's a lot of fun stuff that you can play with in that.
Yeah.
But
much like Steel, there are just certain constraints of story.
Yeah.
That hold the character back.
So do you think he goes above or below Steel?
Below.
You think he goes below Steel?
I like Steel more than I like Superboy. I like Superboy a lot, but I like Steel more.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I do think Kal-El means cousin in Kryptonian, which is weird. That's a weird little piece of that trivia. Also, Connor Kent, terrible name. Should have never called him that.
What is his relation to the Kents?
Well, I mean, he's the clone of their son. What are you going to call your clone, Matt?
I mean, I guess he's got to have my last name,
Connor D. Wilson.
Connor D. Wilson, yeah.
There you go. Another thing I really liked about the 90s version of Superboy, no secret identity.
Yeah.
Like, all of his home life stuff was weird Cadmus stuff, which made him weirder.
Right.
And I think that worked for him.
It made it different from
Superboy, from previously existing
Superboy, and from Superman at a time when you needed four distinct characters who had elements of Superman but were different from Superman.
Right, right, exactly.
And Steel already had that home life.
Yeah.
So it made sense to give him something different and weird.
I'm going to suggest something to you.
Okay.
I'm going to suggest that we slip in Superboy between Starman Michael Thomas and Starman Ted Knight.
I'm good with it. I'm good with it.
I think that's... So he enters the list at 15.
Next on Tom's list is Cyborg Superman Hank Henshaw.
Sucks. Super sucks.
Yeah.
Cannot deal with him.
He kind of shows up and shits in the punch bowl every time he shows up in a story.
That's a very good way to put it. Aiden loves watching Legends of Tomorrow with me and Flash and Supergirl because I've been obsessed with DC Comics for 30 years.
Right.
So every time, like, she's like, every time someone comes on the screen, I'm like, is that Valentina Vostok? She's like, who's Valentina Vostok? And I'm like, oh yeah, she was in the Doom Patrol.
She was in the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, like, they're bringing in Doom Patrol characters in the show.
And then they made her Russian Firestorm, which is
amazing.
Weird.
Talk about Svarazich. Love some Svarazich. Anyway, but like, watching Supergirl, it's like, I have the exact opposite reaction. It's like, you know, yeah, this is Hank Henshaw. I'm like, bleh. Oh, God. No.
Yeah, it's weird, like, because they've kind of retconned Hank Henshaw into something else in the New 52.
Yeah.
But he still sucks.
Like, I don't get him. I don't get him.
Wasn't there an attempt for a while to make him kind of an anti-hero?
Well, he was a Sinestro for a bit, right?
That is, yes, he was a Yellow Lantern.
He was in the Sinestro Corps.
Yeah. But I feel like there was an attempt to kind of make, like, not necessarily redeem him, but make him less of a villain. And like, none of it really works.
Yeah. Like, because Hank Henshaw, correct me if I'm wrong, he's a Reed Richards analog, right?
I believe that's true, yeah. But I mean, like, I mean, the name Hank Henshaw is kind of a clue on that.
And because he's an astronaut and he goes off into space, but instead of, like, getting Fantastic Four powers, he ends up, you know, aliens turn him into the Cyborg Superman.
Right.
Yeah. But it's like, that idea is all over the map. Like, just describing him like that, that is all over the map. And I don't get him.
His origin is also super gross, because, like, his skin melts off, and he's like, a skeleton under there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the character Cyborg Superman is kind of super gross.
Well, I mean, it's just like, what if, you know, he's the Terminator.
Exactly.
What if Superman was the Terminator?
But then there's another guy who's the Terminator?
Yeah.
We're going to get to in a minute?
Yeah. So, I say a nay-no. To Hank Henshaw, Superman. Got to put the nano on that.
All right, where do we put him?
Well, he's not going above Adam X. I would put him under Will Payton, above Extraño.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, I think that is. So he enters the list at 27.
And then finally on Tom's list,
can I guess?
If you haven't already guessed, Eradicator.
The Eradicator sucks.
Yeah. Weirdly sucks. Should be cooler than he is.
Should be cool. Kryptonian super intelligence that survives the destruction of Krypton, but is a bad guy. Like, that's basically like animated series Brainiac, right?
Yeah, and look, we've talked about how much we like Roger Stern.
Roger Stern's great. Roger Stern's the shit.
Eradicator, not Roger Stern's best work.
No.
Not Roger Stern's best creation. Because here's my sense of Eradicator. He's kind of nothing.
He's...
Like, what's memorable about him?
Yeah, it's like, unfortunately, it's like a lot of that stuff from that era of Superman. Like, there's so much stuff from that era of Superman where it's like... Like, what... Okay, but what is this? Like, Bloodsport. Like, Maxima. Like, there's stuff there that's maybe good ideas, maybe... was in some good stories, but it's like, what is it, though?
Yeah.
And I feel like, in a lot of ways, the Eradicator is the most that.
Maybe with a character like the Eradicator,
uh-huh.
It's hard to endow them with personality.
Yeah.
But, boy, does Eradicator have no personality.
Yeah.
Like, and he is just the Terminator. Like, he's from Krypton, and he's, like, got that backstory. But, like, They like in that in the I just remember those four images of the four Supermen from Reign of the Superman.
Yeah.
And like Steel was there and I was like, man, that guy looks cool.
Yeah.
Superboy's there, I'm like, Superboy's a little weird, but I can be into it.
Got that fade.
You get that fade.
Got that fade.
Cyborg Superman, I'm like, oh, this guy's clearly a bad guy.
Yeah.
And then Eradicator is like straight up the poster from the Terminator.
Here's the best thing about the Eradicator. He's Superman in glasses. And nobody goes, is that Clark Kent?
But there's
nobody
sunglasses.
Nobody once saw Superman in fucking glasses and asked if it was Clark Kent. Which would have made him, like, Roger Stern, you dropped the ball. I'm sorry, you're great and we love you. You dropped the ball.
Yeah.
On that. I would say Eradicator. Eradicator. Nobody can see the face I'm making right now. Above Cyborg is Superman?
Not by much. Like, Cyborg Superman sucks. Eradicator is nothing, which is worse.
I would say actively bad.
Right.
The Eradicator, I think you could make into an interesting idea.
Well, they tried, because they merged him with a person and gave him a secret identity.
Really?
David Connor.
Another Connor.
Yeah. But it didn't really work out.
Yeah, I would say he goes between Nomad and Cyborg Superman. The only question is above or below Will Payton.
I'll let you make that call.
Below.
All right, so right above Cyborg Superman goes Eradicator. Our final list in this panel president special comes from Ryan Bylick. And these are going to be some tough ones, Chris.
Okay.
I don't think there's any theme, but these are characters that are going to be tough to rank.
Okay.
Here's the one we've been waiting for. Victor Von Doom.
Dr. Victor Von Doom?
Yes.
Dr. Von Doom, as he is commonly known?
Monarch Dr. Victor Von Doom.
Let's scroll back up from where we put Eradicator. All right, Matt, make your case.
I won't settle for less than number four.
So you would say, here's who he's going above. Hellboy.
Yeah.
Forsyth Pendleton, Jughead Jones III.
Yeah.
Squirrel Girl.
Yep.
Who has beaten him, canonically. And Dracula.
Yeah.
But only Marvel Comics Dracula.
That's right.
Yeah. Here's the great thing about Dr. Doom. You've read Final Frontier, the Tom Scioli book, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. It's a character in Final Frontier named Robot Dracula, who is a Dr. Doom analog. And you read that, and you realize, holy shit, that is exactly what Dr. Doom is. He is Robot Dracula.
Here's the thing, though. To me, Robot Dracula doesn't fully encompass all that Dr. Doom is.
Oh, no, it doesn't. But it's like, yes, exactly. Like, that's where we start with how great he is.
Yeah. Dr. Doom is everything. Here's the deal. There is no... Like, there isn't even the slightest competition for a comic book supervillain as great as Dr. Doom. Nobody comes close.
No, no one comes close.
And so we have to figure out where the greatest supervillain goes.
Yeah.
And as of now, the greatest supervillain goes below three superheroes.
Okay.
I would say I don't think I can argue that he's better than Batman.
No. You absolutely not with me. Maybe with someone else.
I don't think I can argue with myself that he's better than Batman.
Right.
But I'm struggling with Superman.
That's the thing. I feel like you could make a case to put Dr. Doom above Superman, but I feel like it would be really hard looking at Superman as a character.
Yeah, it feels a little morally wrong.
I will tell you this. Higher percentage of good Dr. Doom stories than of Superman stories.
I mean,
of all Superman stories and all Dr. Doom stories, higher percentage of Dr. Doom stories are good.
Certainly. I mean, that's partially by virtue of the fact that there are far fewer Dr. Doom stories.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple thousand Superman stories out there.
By virtue of being a villain, there are fewer Doctor Doom stories, because with the exception of a few miniseries, Doctor Doom is always a character in someone else's story.
All right, let's do this. What's the best Superman story?
Canonically, by the Every Story Ever list, it's...
Is it Last Days?
The Last Days, yeah.
Last Days is pretty goddamn good.
It is pretty good. All-Star Superman is up there, too.
Okay. What's the best Doctor Doom story?
It's hard to say.
Is it? I mean, it is. Is it Triumph of Dorman?
I mean, Triumph of Dorman is great.
Is it... It can't be Triumph of Dorman. That can't be the best Doctor Doom story, because Fantastic Four is not in it. It's got to be a Doom versus
story. Well, what's great about Triumph and Torment is that it is... I mean, Doctor Strange is in it.
Yeah.
But Doctor Doom is in control of that whole story.
Yeah. It's a good-ass book.
He's not being driven or guided by anybody's else's actions. He is driving the action in Triumph and Torment.
Yeah.
This is where we bring back how great Roger Stern is.
Roger Stern is really... Look, do not judge Roger Stern by the Eradicator. Judge Roger Stern by Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut, if nothing else.
Sure.
Yeah.
But there are so many great Doctor Doom stories.
Yeah.
And here's the... Not to say that there aren't bad Doctor Doom stories, but they're kind of few and far between. Because just by virtue of Doctor Doom showing up, they're pretty good.
Also, no other character has an out for being in a bad story like Doctor Doom has.
Because it's a Doombot.
Because it's a Doombot. Any Doctor Doom story you don't like is not a Doctor Doom story.
That was a Doombot.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah. Like, oh, okay, here's a bad Doctor Doom story. When he was... And I think Kieran Gillen wrote some of this, which... You know, Kieran Gillen's great, but the whole thing where he was making, killing Asgardian gods to, like, dissect them and take their parts, that was not great.
That does seem like some shit he would do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember
that's another thing about Doctor Doom. Everything sounds like some shit he would do.
Anything that's kind of bad.
Anything. Like, Secret War. Remember Secret War? Where it's like, oh yeah, Dr. Doom's been funding the Tinkerer for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like some shit he would do.
Sure.
Dr. Doom stiffed Luke Cage for $200. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, like, here's the versatility of Dr. Doom.
Versatility is a big thing with me, you know.
Where he can be in a story small as a hero is mad at him for owing him money. And a story as big as Secret Wars, where he is the God Emperor of a world.
God Doom, yeah.
Every Doctor Doom from point A all the way to point Z works.
Yeah. Doctor Doom can lose to Squirrel Girl, and that makes Squirrel Girl better, and makes Doom better.
When he goes out on his back... He puts you over, brother.
He puts you over. Dr. Doom will put you over. Look. I think we gotta do it. I think we gotta say Dr. Doom is better than Superman.
That's crazy.
It is.
But it's right.
But it's right. It's absolutely right. It's absolutely right.
Alright, let's do it.
And again, these are the best... These are the best characters in comics. So being 3 and 4 is a good, it's still good.
Yeah.
But we gotta do it. You talked me into it. Coming in just under Batman, entering the list at number 3, your favorite character, Dr. Doom, Victor Von Doom.
All right. Next up on the list from Ryan is Emma Frost.
I like Emma.
Yeah. Emma is... In some ways, a victim of inconsistent characterization.
She is, but I like... Emma's hard to pin down. But I like that there's, you can explain a lot of that as character development.
Well, yeah, I think hard to pin down, like I was saying earlier, it's one of those things where you could say it's a bug. It's one of those things where you could say it's a feature.
Yeah, because, I love the fact that Emma has been an X-Man since the mid-90s. And Kitty Pryde still hates her.
Sure.
Cause on a personal level.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, she never really atoned for the villain shit she did.
She just stopped.
She just stopped.
Which?
Or, she straddles that line. This is something, and I've explored it before in, like, some serious writing and some comedic writing.
Mm.
Women, female characters in comics, straddle the line between villain and hero in a way that male characters never do very much. And I don't know what that says. But Emma Frost does it. Catwoman does it.
Talia
does it.
Ivy.
They switch sides all the time. To the point where it's sometimes hard to identify super villainesses who are strictly bad.
Yeah.
There are lots of super heroines who are strictly good.
Yeah.
But name for me a few super villainesses who are strictly bad.
Yeah, that was...
There aren't a lot.
I mean, I have Caitlin Kittredge, who has been on the show. She really likes the Baroness from G.I. Joe, because the Baroness is 100% evil. And she's like, Baroness shoots Scarlet in the face and doesn't ever have remorse for it.
Yeah.
And that's like, you never see that. You never see a woman who has the agency to be evil in the way that a man does in comics. But it is this weird thing where I think desirousness and redemption go hand in hand. So like it's not to bring everything back to pro wrestling. Once the people start cheering for the heel, he has to turn face. Once you like him. And it's the same way with a lot of villainesses.
Yeah, but I think one of the things that you can say for Emma Frost that you can't say for, like, Catwoman. Like, Catwoman has had those redemptions where she has, like, had those moments of atonement.
Catwoman clearly changes over the years.
Very much so. Emma has never stopped being Emma. She owns having been the White Queen.
Yeah.
She is still clearly a manipulator. But she also, like, has a relationship with Scott where she clearly seems to care about Cyclops.
Yeah, it's not an inconsistency of character, it's an inconsistency of role.
Yeah.
Because her character, pretty consistent.
I feel like writers have...
Within the bounds of however much X-Men can be consistent, you know? But, like, Emma is identifiable, I think, through a lot of that.
I feel like if you read, like, old White Queen, Chris Claremont White Queen, and then you read, like, Grant Morrison Emma Frost, or maybe that's not a great example, but, like Emma Frost post-New X-Men.
Yeah, like Joss Whedon.
That's a pretty clearly different Emma Frost, but there is a continuum.
But it's the same way as, like, you know, if you listen to War Rocket and Ajax episode 3,
sure.
And you listen to War Rocket and Ajax episode 295.
Huge sounds really different.
Huge sounds really different. Yeah. Like, I sound really different too. Because I've got a cold this time.
All right, let's rank Emma Frost.
No, I think Emma's great.
I like Emma too.
I like Emma a lot. It's weird that she's not in X-Men 92, to be honest. But,
Do we like her more than Steel?
She's certainly done better than Steel, I think.
Yeah.
Like, Steel we like because of potential. And because as a character, we think he's really cool. Emma, I think, has the stories to back it up that Steel doesn't necessarily have.
I think that's fair.
With all due apologies to Louise Simonson and John Bogdanov.
Sure.
But Emma's been a fixture in X-Men for a while, so.
Yeah.
I think I like her more than Steel. I think Hobbs has weirdly become a dividing line.
It's true. I think she might actually go a step above Hobbs. But does she go above Starman? Jack Knight?
She does not go above Jack Knight.
All right, then let's put her between Jack Knight and Hobbs.
Emma Frost.
All right. Next up on the list is someone we could definitely argue is number two in the list of comic book supervillains.
Okay, I'll scroll back up.
Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor's a good one. Lex Luthor's a really good one.
Now we gotta take the good with the bad.
We gotta take the good with the bad.
Because there's a lot of bad Lex Luthor.
There's a lot of bad Lex Luthor. But there's also a lot of really, really good Lex Luthor. And there's a lot of really, like, my first thought was like, oh, you know, Lex Luthor doesn't really get great until 87, you know, until Burn. That's not true, though. Because Bronze Age Lex is really good.
Yeah.
Like, Silver Age Lex, Golden Age Lex, Silver Age Lex, they're kind of whatever. They're, you know, Superman's
well, enemy. Like, Mad Scientist Lex is
yeah
one thing. Evil Businessman Lex, there's a reason why Evil Businessman Lex stuck.
Yeah. That it was, that when they made the animated series and they, you know, they were able to pick and choose the best pieces of Superman mythos to put in, it was Evil Businessman Lex.
I mean, it's Evil Businessman Lex seasoned with Mad Scientist Lex.
Yeah.
Which is what he is in the comics now.
Which is what he is in the comics now. Which holds up.
But LexCorp is consistent from 87 on.
Lex Luthor being reimagined to have all the kinds of power Superman doesn't have.
Right.
Where he has economic power, where he has political power, where he has...
He's a genius.
Like, he's... Like... And he has the ruthlessness to get what he wants. That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
But you go back and read Action Comics 510 to 530... 511 to 513... The great Lex Luthor Reformation story, maybe arguably the best Lex Luthor story of all time. That's all, like, purple pop collar Lex Luthor, and it's still great.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the definitive Lex story for me.
I feel like...
You know what's great about Lex? He has a fucking dog named Destructo.
Yeah.
That he made to kill Crypto. That's fucking brilliant.
Sort of like Doctor Doom, Lex is a very adaptable character, and you can sort of attribute a lot of different, like, there have been so many Lex Luthor plans, and so many things that, like, Lex has been the origin of other Superman villains.
Yeah.
Like, they're versions of Bizarro that Lex Luthor created.
I don't know how you would do it. And I say this as someone writing comics, I don't know how you would do it, but in my ideal Superman run in my head, like as a fan, every bad thing that happens in Superman's life would be Lex Luthor's fault.
Yeah.
You could track it back to Lex. In the way that, like, everything that happens in Born Again, you can track it back to the Kingpin. But that would be everything wrong with Metropolis. Everything Superman has to deal with, you can track back to Lex.
Yeah. The versions of Lex that are maybe a little less... great.
Yeah.
Like, sort of generic supervillain Lex.
Yeah.
Where he's a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
Like a green and purple suit who just, like, headed up, you know, the Legion of Doom.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a great Lex Luthor. He's just kind of bad guy Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Another, like, movie Lex Luthor is kind of just... Gene Hackman's great.
Gene Hackman's great, though.
He's kind of a con man.
Real estate Lex sucks. Real estate Lex is pretty bad.
And then, like weird mid-90s transferred into a clone that had hair and a beard Lex.
Lex Luthor 2, Australian Lex. Yeah. That's rough stuff. Sorry, Roger Stern.
But
Roger Stern's really taking it on the chin in this
episode. A lot of up and down with Roger Stern.
Yeah.
But like
he's been there for it all.
But like even those versions of Lex have kind of been incorporated into an all-encompassing Lex that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he has the green and purple costume now, and he's got the other stuff about him too.
Yeah,
like he can do a real estate thing without losing the cool things about him, and like you know we in like Final Crisis or whatever, you know we had like Alexander Luthor who kind of was that Lex Luthor 2 sort of guy.
Yeah.
So, like, he you can include all that version of Lex Luthor that works, even though it didn't work maybe at the time that it was first around.
Lex Luthor, when he works best, and the reason he works best as businessman Lex is because no human can win a fight with Superman. He's Superman.
Yeah.
So Lex's hatred, Lex's animosity, and Lex's plans always require explanation. And they require a way to... Because he's a very... When he works best, I think he's a very cerebral villain. He's plotting constantly. Here's what we're going to do. And I think that's why animated series works so well with Lex, because Clancy Brown will savor that dialogue.
Yeah.
And honestly, the animated series introducing Mercy as a sounding board, as someone to be like, what are we going to do today, boss? And for Lex to explain things to, was brilliant. And I'm really surprised that Mercy hasn't stuck around. Like, I never expected her to be as popular as Harley Quinn, but, you know, of the animated series inventions, that Mercy didn't stick around was very surprising. Because Mercy, I think, is a, you know, Lex Luthor's bodyguard, Lex Luthor's chauffeur, is a great idea. But,
because you get to see inside Lex's head.
And you get to see her. And the second best Lex Luthor story is that Mark Miller Superman Adventures issue that I always talk about, where he creates Superior Man to discredit Superman. And there's a brief moment in that where Lex is like at the end of it, after his plan has failed again, Lex is sitting in his office and he's talking to Mercy and he goes, I spent $10 billion this year trying to kill Superman. I work 12 hours a day doing nothing but trying to kill Superman. I've got 50 people on staff and their job is to kill Superman and it's not working. And you get to see Mercy, like, in this one moment, like, someone who isn't maybe romantically interested in Lex, someone who isn't familiarly related to Lex, but someone who obviously knows him and cares about him, you see her kind of relief when he says this, and you see her go, oh, does this mean we're going to stop killing Superman? Like, you're going to stop trying to kill Superman? And he goes, no, I'm going to spend 14 hours a day, I'm going to spend $20 billion, I'm going to get 100 people on staff. And that's, like, the perfect Lex Luthor moment, because he's like, he knows it can be done. He just needs to do it. And I love that. Yeah. I love that moment.
And we'll stop going on about Lex Luthor in a second. Yeah. But I also think what really works about him is, like, yeah, he's constantly trying to kill Superman. But then there's the part of him who's trying to constantly discredit Superman.
Yeah.
And that's almost as important as, like, physically harming Superman. Because the version of Lex Luthor that really works is the version that knows that as soon as Superman loses the faith of the people, he's lost everything.
Yeah. As soon as you show he can fail.
Yeah.
Then you've won.
Yeah. And, like, you know, the times that you could say that Lex Luthor has won are those few and far between times when, like, public opinion of Superman turns around.
All you have to do is show that Superman can lose, and then Superman's not Superman anymore. He's just another. He's just one of us.
Yeah,
and that's like Lex. That's like prime Lex thinking. Lex is great. I like him a lot. I don't know if I would say that he's the second best villain in comics, though. Like, I mean, obviously, I have my preferences, but he's certainly good.
I think there's an argument to be made.
I think he goes above Dracula.
Okay.
I don't know if he goes above Squirrel Girl. Honestly. I honestly don't.
Alright, let's put him between them.
Yeah. So entering the list at number 8.
Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor.
We'll see if there's another villain that goes higher.
Yeah.
Next up is one we're going to have a lot of trouble with. The Thing, Ben Grimm. One of our faves. Do we even have to talk about how much we love Ben Grimm? Because we've talked about that Marvel 2-in-1 annual.
Earlier tonight, Kyle Starks texted me, because he couldn't remember the exact line from Marvel 2-in-1 annual. And, like, he knew I would know.
Yeah.
So he texted me, and he was like, what does he say in the boxing issue? I was like, I typed it out real quick.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about the Thing. He's the prototype, and Spider-Man's the refinement.
Yeah.
And that's, like, that's they are the two best Marvel superheroes. But the Thing is the prototype. And so what isn't done right with the Thing is done right with Peter Parker.
Yeah.
But the Thing is great.
I think he's got to go above Hellboy.
I mean, Hellboy would not exist without the Thing. Like Hellboy is very much like almost like Earth 4 Ben Grimm, you know?
It's true. He's Ben Grimm with more confidence, yeah. For sure.
Without Reed holding him back.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Liz Sherman is a Human Torch.
Uh-huh.
Professor Broom is a smart guy.
He is.
Who stretches?
Yeah.
Johan? Does Johan stretch? He turns into gas? Is there a BVRD Fantastic Four that we could put together?
Does Abe Sapien go in there somewhere?
Abe Sapien's Namor.
Nice Namor.
Nice Namor. We just unlocked it. We cracked Mike Mignola's code. We did it. Yeah, I think he's got to go above Hellboy, below Superman. Ben Grimm's great.
All right, and the last one on Ryan's list is Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin. Or, I guess, ooh. Green Goblin, parentheses, Norman Osborn.
Green Goblin 1.
Green Goblin 1.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Now, this would also include Hammer director Norman Osborn. Like, Norman Osborn...
Norman Osborn post-return.
Yeah.
Norman Osborn who stayed dead for 25 years.
Yeah.
But then came back and stayed back.
Yeah.
Because he took a healing serum and lived in France for
many years. No, we do not talk about that. We do not. He came back and won Secret Invasion. That's when he first came back. Nothing before that happened.
Some of those stories are not bad.
Some of the Green Goblin stories are fine.
Yeah.
Like, the actual one where he comes back, I think, is really good. Like, shockingly, for it being one of those characters who never should have come back. It's weird that Harry stayed dead. I mean, it's not weird, because it makes perfect sense, but it's like...
Well, he's not now.
Wait, is Harry not dead?
He kind of disappeared.
Is Harry not dead?
Norman sent him away.
I thought Harry stayed dead.
He came back with Brand New Day.
Really?
Yeah.
Somehow missed that.
There was a whole story about Harry being back. American Son.
Is that American Son? Yeah, I was off those books by then.
Okay.
Okay.
Harry did come back.
Yikes.
He is alive.
Okay. All right. Alrighty. All right. So let's talk about Norman Osborn then. Now obviously we're both big Spider-Man guys. But mm-hmm. You're more a Spidey guy than me. Where do you think, do you think he is the Spider-Man villain?
I think it's between him and Dr. Octopus.
Really? You put those two?
Yeah.
I remember, when I was a kid, and I'm sure you had this experience, too, Dr. Octopus was always the Spider-Man villain, but I never bought it. I was like, really? Like, this is his archenemy? I mean, Peter Parker's archenemy is fate.
I mean, that's true.
But I never bought Doc Ock as being his, his equivalent to the Joker or to Lex.
Dr. Octopus, I mean, he's not. If you're somebody who just has a passing familiarity with Spider-Man,
uh-huh.
or you have an idea of who Spider-Man is, you have knowledge of Spider-Man.
Right.
You have seen more images of Spider-Man fighting Dr. Octopus than you've seen of Spider-Man fighting a Green Goblin. Because the Green Goblin was gone for so long.
Was gone for a real long time.
If you are a Spider-Man fan, then Green Goblin is obviously the guy.
Yeah.
Because he killed Gwen Stacy, and then he came back and was revealed to be behind all this terrible stuff in Peter Parker's life.
Yeah.
Including, here's another thing that we forget. Including kidnapping Aunt May and letting an actress who was playing Aunt May die in her place.
Yeah. We did forget about that one, didn't we?
I didn't.
Yikes. Boy, 1996 was a hell of a time.
It sure was. Norman Osborn's a weird one.
He is a weird one.
Because Green Goblin is unquestionably one of the most important Spider-Man characters. But there's also a sense of, especially ever since he came back, kind of not knowing what to do with him. Like, he kind of worked best as being dead for a long time.
I do feel like, and this is an honest opinion. This is not a I get checks from Marvel Comics opinion. I do feel like Norman Osborn as Marvel's Lex Luthor, as the director of Hammer, like Norman Osborn, who, you know, everybody loves him again for nebulous reasons. And, like, I mean, yes, he shot the Skrull Queen. No, that does not mean you should be put in charge of the government.
Yeah.
But, like, Norman Osborn, director of Hammer, I thought was a really good idea. And, because it's, like, because it's a great thing to get him involved with a larger universe, but it's also, hey, what's the absolute worst thing that could happen to Peter Parker?
Sure.
Yeah, Norman Osborn's in charge of the government.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really good idea.
It's a clever idea.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of explaining away.
It does take a lot of explaining away. And I'm not sure how great the... I'm not sure how satisfying Siege was for a lot of readers in terms of getting Norman Osborn out.
Well, and then after that, again, like, what do you do with Norman Osborn?
Then what do you do with Norman Osborn?
Because he hasn't really shown up in any... I mean, there was the Osborn series.
Yeah. That's a good book.
Yeah, but
the Osborn, the Green Goblin's prison gang, I thought was a good idea.
Sure, and there was Green Goblin ultimately being the villain of Superior Spider-Man, because for whatever reason, Norman was the one guy that Doc Ock Spidey couldn't figure out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not to say that there haven't been clever ideas with him.
Yeah.
But I feel like there have been struggles. Like, because even, like, right after he came back, what was the story that happened there? The Gathering of Five? Where Maddie Franklin got powers?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, a bunch of, like, weird stuff switched around.
Mm-hmm.
And Norman Osborn ended up getting carted away to, like, an insane asylum at the end of that. Like... I feel like Norman Osborn had his big stories, and then after that it was just kind of like, and Dark Reign was a kind of one thing where somebody was like, hey, what if we did this?
Yeah.
And it worked. But everything kind of feels like an afterthought with him now.
There is also that weird pre-Brand New Day thing of like, hey, why, like, what on earth would the Green Goblin get out of not just telling everyone it's Peter Parker?
Yeah.
Like, not just going, hey, by the way, I know I'm on trial here for 28 counts of murder, but Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Like, yeah. what does he get out of not doing that?
I mean, I feel like there was a part in Dark Reign where, like, everybody forgot that Norman Osborn was the Green Goblin.
Did they also Brand New Day him? Was it a Brand New Goblin?
I don't remember.
Phil Urich?
But anyway, I think we've gotten into enough.
Okay.
Norman Osborn minutia.
Can we talk about what's great about Norman Osborn?
Sure.
He's literally your friend's dad who hates you, and you don't know why.
Yeah.
He's like, which is the most teenage thing you can have, like the most teenage thing to fight against is, hey, my friend's dad hates me, and I have no idea why. Like, I'm just very uncomfortable around him, and he seems mad at me all the time.
Yeah.
Like, that's brilliant. Stan was right. Stan Lee, 100% right in that fight with Steve Ditko.
If it indeed was a fight.
If it indeed was a fight.
Because Ditko denies that it was a fight at all. Okay, but.
Yeah. If it was a sternly worded six-word postcard.
Yeah. That is the beautiful idea behind Norman Osborn. And yeah. Then the Green Goblin becoming, you know, the thing that Peter... In every aspect of Peter's life, the thing that he dreaded and hated the most, and the worst stuff happening to him were because of Norman Osborn. Those things happening because of Norman Osborn. That stuff all worked really well.
Also, he's your friend's dad who hates you so much that he dresses up as a Green Goblin and invents a flying skateboard.
That flying skateboard is amazing.
The flying skateboard is bonkers.
There's a reason why goblins hung around in Spider-Man comics.
Yeah.
Far, far after that. Because it's a cool look.
It's a very cool look.
Like, there's no natural enmity between spiders and goblins that I'm aware of.
It's one of those things that doesn't make sense, but it works so goddamn well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. So where do you think he goes in the list? He's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because, he's obviously more important than Dracula. But I also like Dracula a hell of a lot more.
I think it's really hard to argue that he's better than Lex Luthor. Partially because he was absent for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I would put him above Marvel Dracula.
I mean, I think that's fair. I like Dracula more. But it's like, we gotta go with what's on the page.
Yeah.
In this one.
So we're putting him between Lex Luthor and Marvel Dracula.
Yeah. Norman Osborn.
All right. That is gonna do it. This panel president special, we hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to send us a panel president list, you can do so at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send Every Story Ever lists. It's where you can send listener questions and comments. Or if you just want to get in touch with us about something else, that is the place to do it. You can also send listener questions to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, leave comments, and read show notes. Quick message coming in. The ghost of Halloween was 2 days ago has texted me, and she says, hi, 6 month update. And she didn't say anything about being glad I'm not dead.
Wow.
But,
brutal.
Yeah, the Ghost of Halloween was 2 days ago.
Very, very mercurial.
Yeah, real...
running hot and cold with her.
Anyway, check us out on iTunes. If you like the show, go on iTunes, search for the show, and leave us a review. The more good reviews we get on iTunes, the more we're featured. Now we're going to tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. About.me has changed so that you can't list a bunch of links anymore. Because they're apparently a bunch of jerks. So, for me...
I have no doubt that there were plenty of websites, there are plenty of accounts on about.me that were, like, just lists of where to get dick pills.
That is probably true. That is probably true.
Pornography.
But I liked using it to list my actual stuff.
Yes, as did I.
We'll find a way to do that eventually. Just for now, I'll say... one place where you can find a lot of what I'm doing is just to follow me on Twitter, which you can go to twitter.com/TheMattDWilson. You can see my tweets. I think I have a link there to Copernicus Jones and a lot of the other stuff I do. Chris, where can people find you?
You can still go to about.me/ChrisSims, and there'll be links there to my Twitter and to Comixology, where you can buy all my comics. Main important thing happening right now, X-Men 92, number one, the start of the new ongoing series, comes out at the end of this month. It's out on March 30th. You still have time to tell your retailer if you want to get those pre-orders up. That would be super cool of you. I hope you enjoy it. It will also be available digitally, of course, on Comixology, but this one is not an infinite comic like Volume Zero was. So please look forward to that. Also, Matt and I do a podcast called Movie Fighters. It's fun. Jordan D. White and I do a comic called Sailor Business. It's fun. Why don't you listen to those? Is there not enough Christmas in your life?
Yeah, listen to some cough-free podcasts.
Yeah, Ajax, we got to do every goddamn week.
That's true. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode with a very special guest. You'll enjoy it. Until then, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
Yeah! Flash.